Good morning. Okay, this is the QTR podcast. Today is May 27th, 2018. Don't have any sponsorship stuff today at all, which is fantastic, so I can get right into it. But before we get right into it, I want to just take a second and reintroduce Montana Skeptic for those who don't know who this gentleman is. Montana Skeptic is somebody who I found on the website Seeking Alpha, which is a website where people can go and post their thoughts on their investments. They can talk about companies they like, they can talk about companies they dislike, and it's a place where basically they crowdsource investing ideas. And so there has been a raging debate on Tesla over the last couple of years as an investment, with people taking both sides of the coin, many people thinking that it would be a great investment. And I guess over the 6 or 7 year track record that it since its IPO, it has performed very well for people as an investment, in terms of at least appreciating from its initial value. There's also been a bunch of people that a voice on the website that has grown a little bit louder over the last year or two, and that is a critical voice, a skeptical voice of the company, company that is pulling a lot of things out of the woodwork and unearthing a lot of things that I personally think being out there has kind of led to this pressure cooker situation for Elon Musk here, where he has kind of flown off the handle over the last couple of months. And the truth about the company, it being a cash-burning company that is going to need a lot of capital and that things aren't always as they seem or as they're portrayed by the CEO, has kind of made its way out into the mainstream narrative a little bit more so now than I think it ever has. And one of the big reasons for that, I think, is because this gentleman, Montana Skeptic, has written quite extensively about the company and quite critically about the company over the last couple of years. He's been one of the louder voices of criticism. There's been a few people out there. Charlie Grant at the Wall Street Journal comes to mind. But this gentleman has certainly made a name for himself over the last couple of years. His research is impeccable. He does a great job diving into the details. Personally, he has a JD from Yale Law School. He's got 30 years experience as a trial lawyer. He runs a family office that manages over $1 billion. He's just somebody whose work I respect immensely. So with that being said, it is nice to have Montana Skeptic back on the podcast. What's up?
Well, that was a kind introduction. I should note that I really get an enormous amount of help. As people who read Seeking Alpha know, I'm an aggregator of ideas and analysis as much as anything. There are some people out there like Ed Niedermeyer, like Bertel Schmidt, and many others who have written, Liam Denning over at Bloomberg, for example. Some of the analysts have put out some of the best and most original pieces. And I simply drink from the Hyperion spring and as much as anything. So that's important to note.
Yeah, that's certainly true. It's been really interesting over the last. It had to be interesting for you, I guess, being such a prominent voice as a critic over the last couple of years, kind of watching the shift from criticism of the company over the last maybe 6 months, kind of shifting from being in this little pocket on the internet to spilling over a little bit into the mainstream media.
Yeah, that's really one of the big questions, is sentiment changing about Tesla? And I have mixed feelings about talking about it, because when I started writing a few years ago at Seeking Alpha, it was really focusing on the financial aspects of the company. And for the past few months, increasingly, and especially the last few weeks, I feel like I'm becoming a gossip columnist, because there has been this, like, just this crazy meltdown from Elon Musk on Twitter. And I hate to spend so much time on Twitter, and he's blocked me anyway, so it's harder to read his posts, but I see what's going on, and we're just in a whole new realm. This guy is tweeting 15, 16 hours a day sometime, and some of them are crazy. A fellow named Dave Sullivan sent me a response he just got from Musk to a serious question, where Musk responded in emoticons. So, we can talk a little bit about gossip at the beginning, and then I want to get back to fundamentals.
Sure. Well, it's interesting. It's interesting because I feel like over the last couple of weeks, people have been saying to me like, "Oh, you've been tweeting about Tesla a lot. You've really been going after them a lot." And I keep thinking, "Yeah, I kind of have." And I've actually tried to slow down in the amount of stuff that I'm either retweeting or in the amount of stuff I'm putting out there. But on the other hand, I'm not proactively going out there and looking for things. I mean, there was a three-week period, I think, over the last 3 weeks where every day we were getting one or two headlines. And whether that was a lawsuit against the company or whether it was, you know, something that he said on Twitter or it was the NHTSA opening another investigation or another accident, the headlines were happening. And so I felt the need to put things out there into the public discourse about them as they were occurring. I wasn't going out of my way to dig up dirt, but it does feel a little bit gossipy. And I think part of that is because I think Musk is having a somewhat of a social breakdown. I don't know really what you call it. Maybe he's getting a little dose of reality.
So let's talk about that for a little bit. First of all,
sure.
Increasingly, I think people are starting to laugh at Elon Musk, and that's a big change. And I wanted to point our listeners out to some of the most brilliant and wickedly funny things out there, which are done by someone who calls himself Thunderfoot. If you Google Thunderfoot, his name is Phil Mason. And of course, it's always nice to sound smarter than you are. Elon Musk's South African accent helps him a little bit there. And Phil Mason is a British guy, but he's a chemist and with a serious background in physics and nuclear physics. And he started his sort of YouTube career making videos that are 10 to 20 minutes long. And he first started talking about creationism and debunking some of the nonsense with some of the creationists. And he has targeted Elon Musk several times with Musk's absurd claims about the Hyperloop or about shooting rockets to travel from New York to Shanghai and how completely stupid that is, or about how utterly unrealistic a lot of the promises are about solar power. But he has another one up recently about another one of Musk's claims. What was it? There are so many crazy. Oh, yes. This, the L.A. tunneling, the Boring Company. Thunderfoot just destroyed this whole notion about the Boring Company. And it's really funny. And he has a big following. And I think, you know, sentiment starts to change when instead of becoming this figure of visionary genius, more and more people start laughing at you. Seeing the king on the horse with no clothes.
Yeah, here's his video. Elon Musk promises $1 rides in LA transit tunnels. Busted.
Yeah.
It's got 144,000 views, and it likens in the written commentary to the video underneath it. It likens him to the monorail guy from The Simpsons. I don't know if you know who that is.
Yeah, I do.
The guy who goes in and sells the town the monorail.
people have pointed that out to me. And anyway, his videos are just really worth watching and brilliantly done. And there's a few other things that we've seen happen recently. Someone texted me, a really bright person who follows Tesla closely, and said, "Is this a Jimmy Swaggart moment for Elon Musk? Because you have, first of all, these very weird attacks on the labor unions where he sort of threatens the labor unions, hey, you play hardball with me and you might have to lose your stock options," which was really a questionable thing to do, even under the law. And I wrote about that recently, but and Tesla started to backtrack on that. Then he attacks the quote holier than thou hypocrisy of big media companies, he says, who lay claim to the truth but publish only enough to sugarcoat the lie. And, you know, going after his target here was Edmunds, and Consumer Reports. And they had come out with critical reports about the Model 3. And by the way, at first they came out with very glowing reports, and the longer they owned their cars and the more problems that stacked up, they were critical about them. And he attacked Edmunds like that, And when he attacked the media, who jumps in to support him but Donald Trump Jr. with a tweet that supports Elon Musk, which was a strange moment. And then on Twitter recently, he's attacked a woman scientist. And, you know, it's almost like he's, even though I think he's, you know, very much a beloved creature of the progressive left, he's also has these weird alt-right tendencies now, which are coming to view. And some people are pointing out, you know, this is a guy who was a privileged white person who grew up in apartheid country. And just a few weeks ago, he attacked a blogger who calls himself Existential Comics. And the blogger made a serious point. Okay, the blogger, I think, is a Marxist or a Bolshevik or something, and I certainly don't have a lot of common ground with him, but he was dead on when he said, you know, how funny from – how strange, how hypocritical for Musk to say that big oil gets all these subsidies and Tesla is the underdog. The exact opposite is true. Tesla is a company that is absolutely dependent on its existence for continuing subsidies – and with punishing its competitors by mandates and penalties, and it employs a battalion of lobbyists to help it accomplish this in state legislatures and in at the United States federal government level and in countries around the world. And he pointed that out and challenged Musk on Twitter, and Musk said, called him a chimp. He said, there's no use arguing with a chimp. You're blocked. Now, to call somebody a chimp, and by the way, the guy appears to have an afro in his icon. Whether he does or not, I don't know. But let me just say, that's really an unappealing, unattractive moment for Elon Musk.
Now, it certainly doesn't seem to be conduct becoming of a public company CEO.
Yeah. And then this past Friday or Saturday, a New York Times op-ed columnist wrote a piece comparing Musk to Donald Trump, and it was wickedly funny and really brilliantly done. I think it was Brett Stevens is his name. He used to write at the Wall Street Journal, and he's just a brilliant guy. So it's not the voice of the New York Times, but to see a piece like that appear in the New York Times, you know, maybe there is a crack in sentiment. Yeah. So the question is, does that matter? Does it matter? Who's are the people who are, I call them cultists, but who are just so religiously committed to Elon Musk? You know, there's a lot of evidence that seeing indications that your God figure is mistaken, that doesn't shake your faith at all. It fortifies it. When the day of apocalypse came for the Branch Davidians and nothing happened, they didn't stop believing. They believed all the stronger. And so maybe at the margins it matters. Maybe it matters. I mean, more fundamentally, the question we'll come back to later is, does it matter to these institutions who hold so much Tesla stock and have got to be worried about how much change in sentiment is enough that could sink them? And should they lighten up a little bit? And what do they do if there's another equity raise? At what point did they jump on or say
the editor in chief at Edmunds wrote to Elon Musk on Twitter on May 23rd, "Dear Elon Musk, I'm editor in chief at Edmunds. I'm paid by Edmunds to put the consumer first. We bought a Model 3, tell it as it is, good and bad, and millions of consumers respect us for it. We paid you, Tesla, not the other way around. Fix the car, not the media." I mean, that's the editor in chief of Edmunds.
Boom, right?
That's
boom.
It's crazy.
And Edmunds does these, you know, monthly updates you can read. And their April update went through this litany of problems they've had with the Model 3. It's been to the service center two or three times. They've had to replace that center screen. The car is acting up in bizarre ways. And it's been a headache for them. And, you know, they just laid it out. And Musk is going to get in a fight with Dan Edmunds and the people at Edmunds.com. He must feel like he must be really confident in himself.
He must feel like he can take on everybody. He must feel like he can take on the world. And it's a dangerous thing to do, to spread yourself that thin when you're not generating a bunch of cash to back it up. I mean, if you're Herbalife and you're generating $550 million in free cash a year, you can withstand a 5-year bout of criticism and, you know, kind of incoming from all angles because you got a cash flow stream that you can dole out to hire lobbyists and PR firms and you can really put up a fight. But if you're Tesla and you're burning several billion dollars a year and you start trying to, you know, there's mission creep here, right? The goal should be to produce the Model 3. And I mean, I don't even know what you go for. Do you go for trying to hit the production rate, even though it's going to ultimately do bad things to the bottom line? Do you try and just hit the rate you promised and show the market you can keep your promise? Or do you try and rework things so that you can start to drift towards generating a profit a little bit more? That should be 105% of his attention, not SpaceX, not fighting with the media, not anything. And this feels like a lot of mission creep in a lot of different directions. And that can be dangerous.
Yeah, I think so. By the way, do you think that more people have read the Edmonds report or fewer people will read it now because they're discouraged from reading it by Elon Musk?
Well, of course more people are going to read it. I mean, of course.
Yeah, and if you're ready to shell out $50,000 or $60,000 or $70,000 plus for this new all-wheel drive, untested, by the way, so far as I know, all-wheel drive, does the Edmonds report cause you just to swallow hard a little bit and say, do I want to do this? By the way, take a look at Craigslist. Lots more Teslas, Tesla Model 3s, being listed by people who bought them and hope to flip them. And, you know, if you want a Model 3, you can have it tomorrow on Craigslist for what Tesla is selling it for. And keep watching. You may see a better price.
And some of the issues that people are having with this vehicle once they take delivery. Okay, so you're talking about a $60,000 automobile. I mean, you can pretty much get a Maserati for $60,000 now. Or you can get a nice, not entry-level luxury vehicle for $60,000. It's a lot of money. If you're not somebody like, you know, Ross Gerber who's throwing it around and has 5 or 6 cars and just wants to add one to the collection. It's $60,000 it's a lot of money for somebody like me. If I was going to go out and buy a car tomorrow, it would not be a $60,000 car. And then you take that and you compare it to some of the issues that people are having, which really go to show that a lot of the fundamentals of automobile manufacturing that all these other major corporations all have nailed down are not even being touched. You have people's rearview mirrors in their visors are falling out. You have parts that are misaligned. People will open their trunk and they won't be able to close it because the trunk hasn't been properly aligned. I saw pictures online of people getting parts, two different components of the car in two different shades of white, different colors. There's been issues, like you said, with the touchscreen. The cars have been, I don't know if you saw this, but I'm sure you did, but on Friday, I think, or Thursday, it was reported that one of the most recent accidents in Utah involving a woman who wound up hitting a fire truck. Previously, we didn't know whether or not autopilot had been engaged, and it was reported, I think, by Fox News on Friday or Thursday that, number one, the woman did not have her hands on the wheel for, I think, 80 seconds prior to the crash. Whether or not that's a product of Elon Musk telling people at the reveal that they can sleep while the car's in autopilot remains to be seen, but we'll talk about that in a second. Number two, the car was found to have accelerated for the 3.5 seconds prior to the accident. Did you see that?
Yeah, but I did. And here's what's fascinating about that Utah accident. Within hours after it happened, Tesla gave a full report to the police chief involved who was investigating it and said this woman did not have her hands on the wheel for 80 seconds before, and it's her fault. And the Utah police wrote this letter basically exculpating Tesla and giving the woman a fine, you know, a misdemeanor fine for reckless driving or something. So here you have Tesla instantly ratting her out to get the publicity of a letter that says all her fault, not our fault. Later, only a week later, do we find out that the autopilot actually caused the car to speed up before the accident happened. You know, this kind of Tesla owns your data. They can manipulate it. They will they will manipulate you to buy the car, but boy, if you have an accident in the car, they will get you. I find it a little frightening. And, you know, how extensive is their control over the car? Look at this Consumer Reports issue. Consumer Reports said, you know, we have real problems with the Model 3 that cause us to say we're not going to recommend the car. And among them were the braking is much more poor than we expected. And there's wind noise, which seems to be a lot of wind noise for a car in this day and age. And the touchscreen is awkward and difficult and maybe a little unsafe, by the way.
And a distraction, so, right? They said it's a distraction. Yeah.
So Tesla ignores those last two issues, and it focuses on braking. And suddenly, Elon Musk instantly knows there's a problem. How? You mean he just now found out? And he says, oh, don't worry about the braking. We'll fix that with an over-the-air update. Would you please retest the car? Okay, and Consumer Reports says, okay, we'll retest the car. Well, I am sure there are some over-the-air updates that can be done on braking because it uses regenerative braking. But when you change parameter one, what happens to parameters two or three or four? What happens to the longevity of the brakes? What happens to the fuel efficiency of the car?
Right.
What happens to the way the car handles? And if Tesla can over-the-air update your brakes and change the way your car operates, what else can it do over-the-air and not tell you it's doing and change the way your car operates? I mean, it really raises a lot of questions if you're thinking about this. And you won't find out from Tesla. They won't tell you they're doing it. It's just included in over-the-air update version 27.17, and suddenly your car is handling differently. And how plausible is it that Musk only just learned that the car's braking was far worse than the claims that it made about its braking?
I don't know, but that review was atrocious. I mean, it was really bad. The fact that somebody had commented that this was the worst they had seen in X amount of years of working as somebody who tests car brakes. I don't know the thing verbatim, but basically, so one of the people that tested the vehicle said, you know, I've never seen anything brake this poorly. I had a couple of trucks that were kind of in the same realm, but
the Ford F-150 brakes better.
Right. Okay?
So here's this guy saying this is holier than thou hypocrisy of big media companies, right, who lay claim to the truth but are sugarcoating the lie. And then instantly, oh, and by the way, I guess it is true about our brakes, but I'll fix it right now with a magic over-the-air update. I'll fix this thing. You know, your story, Elon?
I think you make a really good point, which is something I haven't thought of, and that is once you start to adjust parameter one, what happens to parameters two, three, and four? I mean, this is like I liken it almost to the Fed adjusting interest rates, right? The interest rate is supposed to be a market price that comes, you know, as a result of the supply and demand of money to borrow and money to lend, but and when somebody adjusts it, what happens to all of the other, you know, it's like a zero sum game almost. When you change the interest rate, what happens to GDP? What happens to the stock market? What happens to this? What happens to that? And this is the same type of situation, right? You have a car that is being sold and billed as it can get X amount of gallons per mile. You know, the brakes have X amount of life to them. And then when you do make these adjustments, what happens to all the other parameters? Everything else kind of has to adjust around it, right?
And not just that. It's not just the brakes. What other systems in your car can Tesla mess with, does it mess with, without telling you? And what? How does that change what you were promised? It raises a lot of questions.
Let's talk about the touchscreen real quick. You know, the Consumer Reports article that came out noted that having everything on this one touchscreen and not having your traditional dashboard where your dials and stuff, you know, they put buttons on the steering wheel now. I can adjust my radio from the steering wheel. The point is to keep you attentive, to keep your hands on the wheel, to keep you looking at the road. And Consumer Reports basically came out and said the touchscreen is a huge distraction because everything has to be done by looking, you know, over to the right and looking at this one panel. So while aesthetically the dashboard may look very sexy, whether you're into that or not, from a utilitarian standpoint, it isn't the best idea. Now, let's take that and link that in with what Elon said at the Model 3 reveal, which I had never heard before. I just heard this a couple weeks ago and had replayed it for one of my podcasts like last week or 2 weeks ago. But when he was doing the Model 3 reveal, We know he said the car would be $35,000, and so far that has not been the case. And I'm sure you're aware of this, but he also said, you know, in the future, and then he said the future being now.
Right.
And then he said,
the future.
You'll be able to sleep. You'll be able to read a book. You'll be able, you know, the car will be fully autonomous, the future being now.
Yeah. Listen, this fully autonomous, the stuff he said about fully autonomous, by the way, Tesla changed its website, changed the language on its website about its full self-driving promise recently.
Very oh, really?
Interesting. Little edit. Yeah.
What did it do?
I don't have it at my fingertips, but it basically walked back a lot of its promises about these cars being full self-driving anytime soon. It's a fascinating change. There's so much happening. It flies by. I'm sorry, I don't have that at the tip of my fingertips, but it was a change and it was noted on Twitter. But this, you know, Chris, one of the problems with doing these webcasts with you is that you announce them in advance and then we get these to-do lists. And so we got one today from somebody who calls himself at the benchmark. I like that. BENSCHMARK. And he's got like 10 things on the to-do list and everybody's adding more. But I've picked out three and one of them is Tesla Autopilot.
You mean on Twitter? And people are listing things on Twitter? Is that what you're saying?
Right, exactly.
Oh, okay.
And so this is a to-do list for real journalists out there, okay? If you're interested in not being just a stenographer for Tesla or, the person who opens the pews at the congregation service, then how about writing about some things? And one of them is Tesla Autopilot and the absurd claims that have been made and the lies that were used to promote it. And
right.
They ought to look at the change that was just made to the website, number one, and they ought to go watch that painted black video, the famous painted black video that was incredibly deceptive, suggesting the car didn't need interventions to drive itself when there were many cuts in the video and many interventions. And Ed Niedermeyer has written about that. Which brings to mind something that just happened in Europe. There's a huge Tesla fan who calls himself Yu Zhu. So Yu Yu Xiu, I think. And he was driving his Tesla across Europe and reporting on it. And he's in love with Tesla, just one of the biggest fans.
Oh, I saw this
online.
I saw this.
And so he had Autopilot on, and Autopilot drove him into a wall and destroyed his car, which he didn't have insurance on. I mean, welcome to the millennial craze of Tesla. And so he reports on this online, and Tesla fires back and says, "We told you the cars were not safe to drive in Europe because they're not homologated there yet. They're only homologated in Canada and the United States." Well, that's and Bertel Schmidt, who writes very knowledgeably about this, challenged Musk immediately and said, "Wait a minute, that car is completely legal to drive in Europe. You had no warnings about Autopilot to this guy. You told him he wouldn't be able to get technical support or service centers while he was in some of these countries. But the car is certainly legal to drive there. You just can't register it there till it's been homologated." And Yu Zhu is also saying, "Wait, yes, now you're just making things up. You're lying." All these people jump to Elon Musk's defense and attack this poor guy who's simply pointing out how incredibly dangerous Autopilot is if you really believe all the claims about it. So I'm hoping that there will be some real journalist, New York Times, maybe, you know, Tim Higgins, who's done some real work, who looks into this.
You know what's interesting? Sorry to cut you off. You know what's interesting is Electric actually reported it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they could hardly not, because they're always talking about how wonderful this guy is on his trip across Europe. And now that he's had his car destroyed by Autopilot, they better say something. Okay. So anyway, that was item one on our...
It's crazy, too. I'm looking at the photographs. The car is missing its front left... tire. The tire has come off the car completely. And I'll just read this real quick just for a little color for people that aren't familiar with the incident. This is what Electric reported. They said the Tesla Model 3 unofficial road trip in Europe has ended with a crash in Greece. The driver, who is unharmed, is blaming Autopilot for veering into the median by itself. Now, you're saying this guy is a Tesla supporter, right? And here he is.
I mean, he's if Elon Musk is the minister, this guy is certainly allowed to give a sermon during weekdays. He's a huge Tesla supporter.
It says, Yu-Yu Zhi, an early Tesla Model 3 owner, created the project to tour North America and Europe and show the new electric vehicle to the many reservation holders. We caught up with him in Quebec during the North American tour. Later, he shipped his Model 3 to the UK to recreate the experience in Europe, something that Tesla tried to discourage him to do, since the Model 3 hasn't been yet homologated.
There's electric.
Homologated.
There's electric
in Europe.
Giving the spin. Stop right there. Look at how electric gives us the Elon Musk spin there. Okay. Tesla said, look, you won't have a service center or tech support over there. It didn't say don't do this because our autopilot won't work over there.
It says it is not compatible with local charging standard, nor does it have an internet connection. Go ahead.
That's not autopilot, is it? So why is electric spinning this as they always do? It's honestly the Fred Lambert electric is reporting on Tesla is such an incredible disgrace. They're a Tesla fan site, period. They are not a news site.
They are. And actually they're relatively new site that they're doing quite well, and I'm guessing it's all from their Tesla report. Let me just finish this real quick, okay? Yu-Yu decided to go through with the trip nonetheless. And it went well for a while until today. He posted those pictures on his Facebook page and confirmed that the trip was over. And again, the car is badly damaged on the left side, and it's missing, looks like, both left side tires. He commented about the circumstance around the crash. This is his writing. Vehicle was engaged on autopilot at 120 kilometers per hour. Car suddenly veered right without warning and crashed into the center median. Edit divider at the exit fork. Both wheels, edit one wheel, completely shattered. My door wouldn't open correctly, and I am unharmed. And now Tesla sent Electric the following statement, and then I'll get your comment on this if you don't blow a head gasket first. Tesla sent us the following statement. While we appreciate Yu-Yu's effort to spread the word about Model 3, he was informed that Tesla does not yet have a presence in Eastern Europe, and that there is no connectivity or service available for vehicles there. In addition, Model 3 has not yet been approved and homologated for driving outside of the US and Canada. Although we haven't been able to retrieve any data from the vehicle, given that the accident occurred in an unsupported area, Tesla has always been clear that the driver must remain responsible for the car, at all times when using autopilot. We're sorry to hear that this accident occurred, and we're glad that Yu-Yu is safe. And Yu-Yu later updated the post by saying, policeman responding on scene is a fan of the Model 3. Go figure. I'm just stating the facts in my post. My insurance is third party only, which means I'll receive no compensation for this collision. I'm now calling a tow truck who will tow the car to somewhere in Greece as it is not drivable. Blah, 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 blah. But he actually, this final post he made, he sounds like he's defending himself.
He's got a further post up where he says Tesla is misrepresenting what's happened here. I mean, here, look at Tesla's response. They basically said, well, we told him that, you know, in Europe, we only have white cars. We don't have green or red ones, and yours is green or red. And we told you that in Europe, most people like 19-inch wheels, but you have 18-inch wheels. But okay, great. But you didn't tell him that his autopilot wouldn't work, okay? You told him all these other things, but not that autopilot is unsafe. Maybe you should stop calling it autopilot, Tesla,
right?
Because it's not autopilot. A lot of people have learned that lately. It's dangerous. It hasn't been adequately tested. You don't have adequate hardware on the cars to ever support full self-driving like you claimed. It's just people – Musk will – you know, maybe I am blowing a head gasket. I'm a gentle guy, but this guy lies and lies and lies. He's a crook. He's a charlatan. And he has sold something that he doesn't have the goods to deliver. And it's about time he admitted it. Stop calling it autopilot. Stop telling these people they're ever going to have full self-driving on these cars. And started being honest with people and focusing on business instead of making up stories. That's how I feel about him. I've become increasingly disgusted with how dishonest he is and how quickly all his fellow cultists will jump to his defense over anything and everything. I got that out of my system.
Yeah, that's good. A little therapy on Memorial Day weekend.
The invented Elon Musk is so different from the real Elon Musk.
I know.
Anybody really paying attention can see that.
I know. There was a great piece, by the way, too, written by Dan McCrum in the Financial Times last week. Did you read that piece?
Yeah, basically, it was terrific. Yep.
Yeah, I forget what it's called, but it basically just takes the – it lays out how the fantasy has kind of been constructed about Musk and about Tesla, and then it cuts right through it. It really eviscerates it with the actual facts. And Dan McCrum is a brilliant writer. I love reading him. I read him so much. He used to write about the Herbalife saga when it was going on too, and I really enjoyed reading him. That's a piece that I would encourage people to read.
People may be able to find it. I have a Financial Times subscription because I really enjoy it so much, but I think that might have been on their Alphaville site, I think it's called. And so
it was.
You may be able to access it even without a subscription, and it's really well done, very well done. That's really worth subscribing to the Financial Times. I think it's just a terrific, terrific source of news and intelligent opinion.
So let me ask you another question. I don't want to. I don't want to push you over the edge here this morning. I want to keep things relatively low key since it's the weekend. But did you see that J.B. Straubel's name had been taken out of the 10Q?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, someone pointed that out on Twitter. A really good find.
Yeah. What do you make of that? Well, first off, why don't you tell people what happened, and then maybe tell them what you make of it.
I know you did a podcast about this or wrote a piece or both, but essentially in Tesla's SEC filings going way back, they identify the indispensable people to the company. And they have always mentioned two people, Musk and J.B. Straubel. And the most recent, I think it was the Q, mentioned Musk again, but deleted the reference to Straubel. And so the question is this like a, you know, it's just like in the old days of the Soviet Union where somebody would be photoshopped out of the – by a cruder technique than Photoshop, of course, out of the picture at the May Day parade or something. I don't know what to make of it. And so I'm just going to stay agnostic about it.
Well, did you see the company response that I got? See, you're a lawyer. This is why I want to ask
you this. I saw that you said, hey, what's going on here to the investor relations department at Tesla? And they said, oh, we're just trying to streamline our disclosures.
Well, I got this bizarre response. Listen to this, right? I wanted to ask the company what the official explanation was for it, and I figured I would get a no comment, and I didn't. I didn't get a response from IR. I got a response from somebody else at the company because I was provided with an email address for somebody who was a contact. So I reached out to somebody individually, and they came back to me with a response that said, on background, you know, you can quote what I say, but don't say my name. Don't quote me as a source, but we just took that stuff out of there to streamline things, and that was it. And so I sent this person back another email saying, you know, they asked me in a second email, what are you writing about? What's the piece about? And I said, I'm trying to figure out why his name was removed. I said, nobody goes through a 10Q and a 10K. That might fly with most people, but I've worked on these documents with securities lawyers, and you're a lawyer yourself with an extensive amount of experience. Am I wrong in suggesting that these wording changes are not just made arbitrarily and that is a nonsense-sounding answer?
Yeah, that is nonsense. There are no accidents. That said, let's just keep an eye on it. I mean, losing Straubel would be devastating to Tesla, I think. He is clearly a hugely important guy, and a lot of the people who really know better about Musk's claims to being some engineering genius and technical genius know that Straubel is the key guy at the company. And so if there's something going on there, it's absolutely worth watching.
For people that don't know about Straubel, give them 2 minutes about his importance at the company and kind of.
Well, you know, he's been with Elon Musk for a huge amount of time. He was part of the founding team there. He's, I think, the chief technical officer is his title, and has his fingers on all the technical aspects of the vehicles, hugely involved in the engineering of the vehicles and evaluating their technology, you know, probably directs their research and development, a very highly regarded both businessman and technical guy around you know, in all quarters. I think he had established a great reputation for himself even before he came to Tesla. Almost everybody else at Tesla, he hasn't worked in the auto industry before Tesla, I don't think. But he was involved in building electric vehicles before he ever came to Tesla, and been very interested in them. So, I mean, he is the big technical guy at Tesla. I would need to go look at a resume and research him a little bit to do better than that for you. But he invariably appears as the voice of Tesla at many big convocations and gatherings where Musk needs somebody who really knows what they're talking about to explain things to the assembled investors or media or fans.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about this last piece that you wrote here on the company, which is you're going to need a bigger parking lot?
Yes, I will. Let me cover the other two things that I wrote down that are on the to-do list, okay?
Sure.
Another article that some of those holier-than-thou media types might consider writing about are Tesla's safety claims. I think Morgan Stanley came out with a piece a few weeks ago saying, oh, there have only been 5 fatalities in Tesla cars, some low number. And a guy named Elon Bachman, calls himself Elon Bachman at Twitter, started gathering up all the actual number of fatalities. It turns out there have been 40 total fatalities involving Teslas, okay? 28 in which the driver or a cyclist or a pedestrian were killed. And then I think the other 12 involve passengers who were killed. And you can see the list if you go to Twitter and look for Elon Bachman, like Bachman Turner Overdrive. And there are a lot of luxury cars out there where there are zero fatalities. And Tesla has 40 fatalities. It is not true that Tesla is, in the words of Elon Musk, the safest car on the road. It is not true that it is 4 times safer than the average car. I suspect that the number of fatalities for Teslas, given how new they are, is well above average. And I wish somebody would gather the data again. It certainly was well above average a few years ago when I did it at Seeking Alpha. And I suspect that Teslas have an extraordinary number of unintended acceleration events, possibly because people get confused about what pedal to press. And, you know, the car has such instant acceleration, which makes it more dangerous. There's always a trade-off. Anyway, that's one of the items on the to-do list, so I wanted to mention it, that I thought was very compelling.
Sure.
And another item on the to-do list is someone ought to go back and Google Tesla Model S battery swap, HD official. There's a YouTube video where Musk a few years ago demonstrated battery swapping, and it is a P.T. Barnum production, if ever there were one. It was deceptive. It was misleading. You did not get to see what was really happening. And Tesla sold the idea to all its fans and to the California Air Resources Board, which awards these ZEB credits, that it was capable of instant refueling with battery swapping. And it got all these extra subsidies as a result of that. And it, you know, Musk gets up and he says, listen, you know, well, we have superchargers, and they are, and they always will be free. But now you can also change your battery out instantly. So your decision is, do you want it free or do you want it fast? And he goes through this demonstration, and it is so incredibly misleading. Somebody ought to take him to – and more than just misleading – it got him ZEV credits, which meant that the people who bought cars that were not internal combustion cars all around the nation had to pay extra so that their auto companies could subsidize Tesla further by having to buy more of these ZEV credits.
Right.
So those are the three things.
The video is the video is officially called Tesla Model S Battery Swap HD Official. And Musk comes out and he's wearing what appears to be a velvet jacket. I know that's unrelated. I'm just having a laugh about that on my own. Sorry. He's wearing a velvet jacket, and here he has a timer set up. And what he's showing is on the left, so on the big screen for everybody, this timer starts, and on the left you have a guy in an Audi who pulls up to a gas pump who's taking his sweet-ass time getting out of his car and getting ready to go over and pump gas. And on the right, what you have is you have a Tesla Model S sitting on stage, ostensibly getting ready to have its battery swapped, and it is on top of some platform here. And the timer...
Right,
go ahead.
No, no, I mean, the battery swap takes place out of sight of the viewer, okay?
Right.
And I'm told it could never have happened that quickly. It's far too complicated to have accomplished it. That's why it's done out of sight. It was all a setup.
You can't
see... It was all phony. I challenge you, Elon Musk, to come after me. I'm telling you, it was fake and phony, and you're a charlatan. And I would love you to sue me so we can have some discovery on this issue. That would make me very happy.
Yeah, just don't sue me, please.
I will personally take your deposition.
Oh, I don't care. I don't have any assets. But anyways, what's going on here is, for people that haven't seen this, because I'm looking at it live, as I wish I could play it the audio through, but I can't. But what's going on is you have this guy on the left that's filling up his car with conventional gasoline, and on the right you have what looks like the car sitting on top of a platform that then falls out from underneath the car and then eventually comes back up underneath the car. And I guess what's happening, the camera keeps cutting to shots of inside the Model S. So you're looking at the dashboard now telling you that a new battery has been installed or that the battery life has gone up significantly. But you can't really see under the car because the camera angles are zooming way out from the car. So you can't actually see the battery being swapped out. But Elon is up there talking, and now the timer's on a minute and a half, and the guy in the Audi is still pumping his gas, and the Tesla Model S has driven away. So they have swapped out a battery, according to this video, in 1 minute and 33 seconds. And now they're bringing a second Model S up, and they're going to do another battery. But you can't really see what's going on.
They set up a battery swap station in California, which was by invitation only. And it was simply, you know, window dressing for these ZEV credits. And they've since finally abandoned their claim that they can do battery swapping. And CARB has finally stopped giving them the extra ZEV credits. But when is CARB going to go and claw those back?
Well, let me ask you a question. How are they claiming to do it?
Well, you never got to see it. It was all magical. You know,
yeah, but they had to have come up with some explanation at some point.
I'm not familiar with what their explanation. People raised questions and explained why technically there are way too many connections and way too much that would have to happen.
Right.
Plus all the practical problems of, you know, what if your car has a new battery and now you swap out with one that's 4 years old and you have much less capacity? Who's going to want to do that?
Well,
It was all unbelievable from day one. Anyone who had who asked any serious questions, but what's wonderful about this video, what I love, is the crowd is in ecstasy.
Oh,
they're just almost orgasmic in their pleasure at listening to Elon Musk and watching him down internal combustion engines. It's really amazing.
I just, I don't know anything about the technological aspect of what's going on here, but the notion that these battery packs, which are, you know, $15,000 parts, and they're massive, and they're the lifeblood of the car, that they can somehow become detached from the car and then replaced in a minute and 33 seconds, makes me wonder, either are they not on there in a secure fashion? Are they? I just don't know. But you're telling me that they never offered any type of technical answer as to how this happened?
No, they set up they had an invitation only battery swap. I doubt they did more than a dozen out there, and they certainly took much longer than a minute and 33 seconds, and then they shut it down.
Well,
so
there's another video here called Close Up of Tesla Battery Swap, and this is showing on the bottom. So this is somebody who's in the front row, and they're looking at the bottom of the vehicle. And what it looks like is it looks like the floor has dropped out. There's like a couple of it looks like a couple of steel like columns that the car is sitting on right now, like four of them maybe. And I'm trying to see if I can't see anything. You can't really see anything happening. And then there's another one here that's called Battery Switch Technology Demonstration. But this is for a different electric vehicle. Oh, I see. The battery is basically like this plate on this one. And, okay, it kind of plugs plugs in. Yeah, I don't know. I'd be interested to know how they claim that it was happening.
So listen, I want I'll answer your question about the latest article. Then I want to move on to what I think we've been talking about some sideshows, and I want to talk about what I think are some more fundamental things.
Oh, sure.
And we'll finish up with that. So my latest article, I think, is called "You're Going to Need a Bigger Parking Lot." And it appears now that Tesla is going to defer the delivery of its 200,000th car in the U.S. until early Q3, July 1 or July 2. And that's probably a sensible thing for it to do, given how far behind it is, though it shows how desperate things have become. And in consequence of that, everyone who can buy a Tesla in the United States in Q3 and Q4 will be entitled to the full $7,500 federal income tax credit. And then after that, it begins to phase down and out in 2019. And the problem is that Tesla ought to be making a whole lot more Model 3 cars than it's going to deliver this quarter. CoverDrive, who is my sidekick and collaborator, estimates, he thinks that Tesla will deliver fewer than 14,000 Model 3 cars, Canada and U.S., in Q2, which is just a really low number. So it's going to be adding to inventory, and it's a really interesting question as to what the market expects in terms of productions, in terms of deliveries. Rather than get into the weeds on that, I will simply say that if Tesla is going to build a lot more than it's going to deliver and stockpile them for delivery early in Q3, it does raise some logistical problems. For a company not known for its logistical efficiency, they're going to have to store and be ready to charge and deliver just a whole lot of cars all over the place. You know, if you have 10 or 20,000 cars stacking up in June in parking lots all over.
You mean they don't have the physical space? Is that what you're saying?
A fellow named Don Bailey said, give me the job and I'll find them space in no time at abandoned shopping malls. But they have to find the space. They have to keep track of all these cars. They've got to have them sitting out in the elements. And I think the sun is still potentially an issue with the Model 3. And then they have to be ready to clean them up, charge them up, and figure out where to deliver them on time. And that's something Tesla's never really been good at when it's delivering 2,000 or 3,000 cars a week. How's it going to handle 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 cars a week to unload these things? It's a fascinating problem. And I think it's unfortunate for Tesla that it's come to this, where it's going to have deeper Q2 losses, where its failure to execute has stretched them out to have a choice between something that's bad and something that's worse. But that's where they are. So, but I want to talk about, before we finish up, because we're close to the witching hour, I think there are two crucial things. I think the institutional investors, who are really the ones that count, have to be looking at two things. One, how strong is demand for this Model 3? And two is, can this car ever be profitable in any sustained way? I think, you know, it's so increasingly clear that Tesla will not have a $35,000 car to deliver to anybody in 2018. So all these people who signed up for that car,
right,
and were hoping they would get it with the full federal income tax credit, won't get it. And I think Tesla is going to be facing cancellations, and it already is. Also, there's data to suggest, and you know, the data is relatively thin. It's gathered at TMC by self-reporters, but the take rate has been pretty small so far. And maybe these people are all waiting for their all-wheel drive cars. But maybe what they're waiting for is that $35,000 car. And that's a real problem for Tesla, because it can't deliver that car without just taking a terrible bath.
Right.
And, you know, also
– even the company itself said last week – I'm sorry to interrupt you. But even the company itself said last week, I believe – correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't there an official statement by the company that said it's still going to be another 6 to 12 months before those cars even roll off the line?
Well, I think it was like Elon Musk saying another 3 to 6 months after we hit 5,000.
Right.
You know, please don't push me to deliver the car, I promise, because if we do that, we will go broke and die.
Right.
I mean, he actually wrote that. We're going to go broke and die. Yes, you are going to go broke. And whether you die or not, there's always life after death with Chapter 11. But they can't afford to deliver and I've said it forever, and others have said it forever. This car costs more than $35,000 to make, and that's before you get into Tesla's absurd, horrible, industry-worst operating costs. So, no, you're not going to see a $35,000 car, certainly never one with a federal income tax credit. And people are waking up to this, and I think that's going to affect demand for this car, and that's going to affect their reservation rate. And it's also clear that Tesla is a creature of the subsidy. You know, there are subsidies now in Canada, so it's rushing cars to Canada before those dry up. In Europe, where it's a level playing field, their sales are terrible. The only exception is Norway, where you have huge incentives to buy an electric vehicle. So Tesla lives by the subsidy. I think you're going to see a huge lobbying push by Tesla in the coming year
right.
to extend these federal income tax credits, because without them, they're just in deep trouble in the U.S. And so I think the institutions are aware of this and they're watching this and they have to be worried. What's going to happen to Tesla in 2019 and in 2020?
Certainly you can't say the word isn't getting out there. The first article that came up when I just did a quick search was CNN, which whether you like it or hate it is definitely a mainstream source. And the title of the article, this was out 3 days ago, was called Tesla's Model 3 Isn't Really for the Mass Market. It's a luxury car. And the lead is Tesla Model 3 with its starting price at $35,000 was supposed to be the car that brought electric driving to the masses. But that's not happening yet. In fact, Tesla has yet to sell a single Model 3 at that base price. There are customers who want those cars, but they'll have to wait while Tesla makes higher priced versions costing $50,000 to $60,000 first. And just last weekend, CEO Musk announced a special high-performance version of the Model 3 that'll cost $78,000. Musk tweeted this weekend about why he's in no rush to produce the less expensive Model 3. Shipping minimum cost Model 3 right away would cause Tesla to lose money and die.
Yeah, so I was wrong. Let's not go broke and die. Lose money and die. Okay. So let's, you know, the competition is coming. In 30 days, the I-Pace begins deliveries in Europe. And that is a compelling car, the Jaguar I-Pace.
Oh, okay.
That happens in 30 days. The deliveries begin in Europe. Already a bunch of journalists have the cars, but they're under a moratorium about writing about it yet.
Right, right.
But we'll start to see reviews, and we'll start to see all the reports I'm getting is that the demand for this car is very high. People want it. And they'll sell every car that they choose to make, and they'll position it as a high end luxury car. They're not trying to be a car for the masses,
right? Right.
And yet, the base I-Pace will cost about as much as the $78,000 souped up Model 3. Which one would you rather drive? I think it's an easy answer. And after the I-Pace, the Audi e-tron will hit later this year. And then it's a flood. I mean, besides at the low end, you have the Kona from Hyundai. Already the Honda Clarity, which is, a hydrogen-based car, is starting deliveries. But there's the Leaf, the Bolt. Tesla's just going to have tons of competition coming. And what does it have new next year? It's run out of its federal income tax subsidies. They're cut in half and then cut in half again next year. It's got all this competition coming. There's the Model Y is – there's not even a factory for it yet. Musk just suggested he might not even reveal it this year. He might reveal it next year. Who knows where they are on it, but they're clearly not spending money on it. And it takes, a couple of years to build a factory and get the production equipment and get it up and running. So you've got a 2019 and a 2020 with no new products of any note.
So much of choosing the Model 3 as the vehicle you want to buy, like you just asked, who would choose the Model 3 over the Jaguar? Certainly, so much of choosing the Model 3 is the appeal of the name. You want to be the person that has the Tesla because there is this aura around the brand. But if it starts to become kind of well known that the car is a lemon, and if the if the sentiment about it changes, you know, if somehow the public sentiment went from being enthralled with this car and amazed that people own a Tesla to why did you waste your money on that car? It's $60,000 and, you know, the dashboard isn't even assembled correctly or whatever. That could be a huge problem. Then it becomes a very obvious choice for people. But I think as long as there's still that appeal to the brand, and it's like, what do they call that? Like being tragically hip when you want to be somebody that has the newest and the greatest thing, regardless of how well it functions. Yeah. Or I don't
I'm
know.
I'm a long way from tragically hip, so I couldn't couldn't say. But you know, the picture that people in Europe are looking at today of the Model 3 is Yu's wrecked Model 3, thanks to autopilot claims. And yes, will that catch up with Tesla? But if you're an institution and you own all this stock, what do you do? You can see a big desert coming. You maybe are praying Tesla will show a profitable second half of this year. And maybe it could eke out a profit in the second half. It would still be grossly unprofitable for the year. But let's say there was like a magic thing happened and Tesla actually had $1 billion profit over the second half of the year. $500 million, which would be bigger than anybody thinks it could possibly do. So that would be like $1 billion a year. So with a market cap of like $50 billion, what does that work out to for a PE ratio? Okay. And at the point where Tesla starts making profits, do people finally say, ooh, you know, this is not exactly a dividend aristocrat. That's a 2% yield. It's a terrible way to invest your money. And especially when you know it can't do nearly as well in 2019 or 2020. So it'll be fascinating to see which institutions lighten up on Tesla. And, you know, it'll be interesting to learn who in this quarter have been the buyers and who have been the sellers.
Your critics are going to say that you're starting to walk back your claims by saying that.
I'm not walking back my claims. I don't believe Tesla can be GAAP profitable in Q3 or Q4, okay? I do not think they can achieve GAAP profitability. I think they can monkey with cash flow. Sure, if you go ahead and stockpile all the cars in Q2 and then unload them in Q3, you'll have some cash flow. But GAAP profitability, I don't think they can get there. I don't think they can get there even for one quarter, even for a $1 million GAAP profit. So we'll see. I mean, they are very good at financial engineering, but I remain skeptical they can even achieve GAAP profitability for one quarter. So I'm happy to say that still. That's where I'm at.
There was another headline I wanted to ask you about that I saw on Friday that I don't know the details of, and I thought maybe you would, but if you don't, that's fine. The headline was a Reuters headline that said that they're flying in a battery production line, and there was some color on it that they had to fly in the parts that they would need to assemble batteries from Europe as opposed to building it from the ground up.
Right. This is fascinating. And we're going to finish with this. Is that okay, Chris?
But you got it, man.
I mean, I only know what I read at the Reuters report. But we heard Musk had said a long time ago, look, we're going to have that all the equipment we need in Nevada at our one-third size gigafactory by April of this year or so. So everything, all that extra equipment will be there. It's coming from Grohmann. Now we hear that just now they flew 6 airplanes full of robots and equipment to California, and then they're trucking them to Nevada to set up another line at the gigafactory. Ooh. Well, you know, that's different from what we had been told, number one. Number two, what kind of company with any kind of planning flies equipment like that around the world? That's just really expensive. And number three, so what? Your big problems are in Fremont, where you can't put this car together correctly. You know, where the car's wind noise and touchscreen problems and braking problems aren't because you have enough batteries. They're because you're building a crappy car because you decided to skip the production part approval process, and you decided to skip production line validation, and you decided to make your own customers the beta testers. And those are incurable problems. You can fly planes full of equipment and robots from Europe all day long, but you're not going to solve those problems. So that's my take on the Reuters report. All right. And that's the word from Montana Skeptic this week.
That sounds
good.
And
it was a pleasure as always, Chris. Thank you.
Yeah, I can imagine it'll be some time before we speak again, because we should let things really develop. And, you know, I don't want to feel like we're going after this every 2 weeks or something, because I don't want people to get the impression that we're, you know, thoroughly out of control, obsessed with this. But
I'm taking June off from Tesla. I'm having a June vacation.
Okay,
I'm going to leave it. That's my plan for June. So we'll catch up again late in the summer, a month down the road or so. Yeah, very good.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on again. I know so many people were happy that you were going to come on. A lot of people are interested in what you have to say. And enjoy the rest of your Memorial Day weekend.
All right. You too. Thanks so much.
All right. Bye bye. That was the one, the only, Montana Skeptic, the man, the myth, the legend. You can check out all of his articles on SeekingAlpha.com under Montana Skeptic. It's always awesome having him on. It really is. He knows this stuff cold, and he was a little ornery today. He sounded like I sounded yesterday in my Jim Cramer podcast talking about Domino's Pizza. He was getting a little pissed. And I think that this is a guy that is truly offended by what's going on here on a personal level. I mean, yes, he's short the stock, that needs to be disclosed, of course. But with that said, I don't know. He sounds like he's had enough. And to be honest with you, based on what we saw last week, it looks like the mainstream media may be on its way to having enough too. So it'll be interesting to see if sentiment does change as we head into the summer and head out of the summer, and see what kind of numbers the company puts up. But I can't imagine we'll be back on talking about Tesla anytime relatively soon, like I said earlier, unless the headlines just make it impossible to ignore, which has really been the case over the last couple of weeks. But hope everybody enjoys their weekend, and I will catch you next time. Peace.